about half of U.S. rice production is export, especially for Latin America. And in our domestic consumers, that's something that a lot of people don't realize. Actually, they use rice quite a lot for produce, for example, beers. Actually, I heard very interesting that one extension person say that in the U.S. we don't eat rice, we drink rice, because one of our big concerns is actually the domestic is the rice industry. But particularly in Louisiana, rice is something completely different in terms of the usage here.
We want to thank the innovative companies and products whose support and trust make this podcast possible.
Boost your yields with KWS Hybrid Rye featuring Pollen Plus technology. Learn more at kws.com.
Welcome to the Crop Science Podcast Show by Wisenetics. I'm your host, Leo Bastos, Assistant Professor in Integrative Precision Agriculture at the University of Georgia. Today, we welcome our guest, Dr. Felipe Dalla Lana. He's an Assistant Professor in Rice Pathology Specialist for Louisiana State University. Felipe, welcome to the Crop Science Podcast Show. It's great to have you here with us today. And to get things started, can you share with us a little bit about yourself and the path that you took until you got to where you are today?
Yeah, first of all, thanks so much to invite me here. I'm very happy to be here and share a little bit what we do and all the path to get in the position that I am today. So I'm Brazilian. I study there. So it's actually, I come from a family where everybody is a farmer, except my parents, especially my mother's side. So my mother's side, they actually moved to the city, but then I still have the other relationship with close to the field, close to my uncles. And so farm was something very always close. In Brazil, we have some agriculture schools. So I did my high school with part high school, the traditional high school. Another part was in agriculture. And it was very natural to go into, to continue in agriculture. So I did my undergrad in agronomy in Federal University of Santa Maria and the master there. So when I moved more for the grad school, the academia, I started to work more on the plant disease, even at the undergrad, but more focused on developing research. On the master's, start work with plant disease. I work at Universidad Federal of Porto Alegre, where I work with soybean rust. And so we develop a lot of work there. So within plant pathology, there is a lot of subtopics, right? You have mycology, bacteriology, virology, nematology, and while specifically I work was more epidemiology, which is basically work with the development of the disease on the space and time. So it's not that much concerned with what happened with one individual plant, but what happened in the fields, in the population of plants. And I fell in love with this, and in 2015, I moved, 2014, I moved to the United States. In 2015, I started my PhD at Ohio State University, where I worked in the development of a forecast system for mycotoxin on corn. At the time, it was not a very common disease, but something changed since 2015. It's been more prevalent disease. It's a very concern, especially for especially swine, and also for the ethanol production. Not that much because interfering the ethanol, but because a subproduct of the ethanol production is the DDGs kind of accumulate much more mycotoxin as the process goes. So working that, and then I moved to Penn State in 2021, where I work with Dr. Paul Isker, also now develop a little bit more work with not only forecast system, but also decision make, how we can gather all this information that we receive and try to make something useful that growers can respond better. You give all information that growers can make a better informed decision. And on 2022, March of 2022, I got this position as rice pathologist for Louisiana State University. And this position is 90% research, 10% extension. So I work very close to the breeding program to develop varieties, especially phenotype varieties for the disease resistance. I work in the development of disease management for here for the growers. So everything relate with a disease on rice in Louisiana, I'd like to be part of that and work in collaboration with other faculties from LSU and from Arkansas, Texas, Mississippi, all the other parts of the United States that produce rice. So yeah, that's basically my pathway to this position.
Nice, fantastic. So a quick follow-up on that, could you tell us a little bit about what types of projects are you currently working in your team?
Yeah, so basically I have, we try to expand the scope of our lab, but we like it to split in 3 to 4 subjects. So we have one that is disease management. There is a lot of to develop the strategy for the growers control. What's the best time to spray? What's the best thing to do? What things to avoid to have a crop that is provided the best economic return for them? Also work very close. The other line of research also work with the breeding programs, as I mentioned before, to identify classified and identified the resistant varieties. LSU has a historical program on the rice variety development, a lot of new technology that were developed here. So it's a program that is basically a commercial level program. 70% of the varieties cultivated in Louisiana are developed here at this station. So it's a big part of my program is to give support to this. Then the third part is more a part that we try to work with in integration with other areas of not only looking in the management, but more in scientific and more in the epidemiology component. So we have a part that we split with data analysis, more epidemiology component. We have other that is try to improve the phenotyping. How can we do identify the disease and the quantity of the disease? And we can talk more about why this is important later. Another part is more start to develop more population studies. At this moment, we have research more working on the identification of fungicide resistance in our pathogen population here in Louisiana. So kind of working from field disease management to data analysis and breeding in the wet lab, traditional phytopathology wet lab.
All right, well, that's really exciting, a really nice path, right? So being through different countries, different crops, different diseases, very, very rich experiences there. So I want to ask you to give us a little bit of context in a couple of different directions. So one of them is perhaps a lot of people don't even realize that we grow rice in the U.S., right? It's not one of the biggest crops that the U.S. produces, but nonetheless, a very important crop. And so I wanted to help you or to ask you to help us understand a little bit more of how important is rice for Louisiana, for the production, for the overall ag industry in the state, and what role does Louisiana rice play in the U.S.? Like, how does it rank as far as the main rice producing states in the U.S.?
If you think of, like, for most of people here in America, you probably not associate the United States with a big rice consumer, right? So especially when they compare with the Asia, China, India, Philippines, Thailand, Bangladesh, all those countries, they eat a lot of rice. But still, in the West, we have about 3 million acres of rice produced here, which is a very large. And yes, that's true. Not all the people know this, especially considering my experience in Ohio and Pennsylvania before. So a lot of it don't even realize how much we have in rice here. Most of the rice is produced in Arkansas. Arkansas produces about half of the rice produced in the United States. Then Louisiana and California, they kind of depends on the year. One is second, the other is second. So depends how much water they have available to California. It might reduce the number of acres they plant there. And you have a Mississippi and Texas. Florida starts a little bit, but more in the rotation of sugarcane. It's not even a major crop yet in Florida. But those is basically the states where you have a more concentration of rice. California is a little bit different than the other parts here, especially because California, as a pathology, I say that it's a lot easier because you grow a crop in the desert, so you don't have the moisture, you don't have the disease pressure that they have. So they can produce a lot of special types of rice. You think in sushi rice or other types of rice that have a high value aggregate to there. In Louisiana, Arkansas, and this region here, predominantly we have a long grain, which is the most common rice that we eat every day. About half of the U.S. rice production is export, especially for Latin America. And in our domestic consumers, that's something that a lot of people don't realize. Actually, they use rice quite a lot for produce, for example, beards. Actually, I heard very interesting that one extension person said in the U.S. we don't eat rice, we drink rice, because one of our big concerns is actually the domestic is the rice industry. But particularly in Louisiana, rice is something completely different in terms of the usage here. It's very present in the local dishes, all the things that the amazing food that you think in Louisiana, they somehow involve rice, either directed rice or in the chain. So, for example, Frinko crawfish and other things, like, they're pretty much very well connected with the rice production. It's a very interesting aspect here in Louisiana, how works the production here.
Nice, nice. Well, as Brazilians, I'm sure that we're all contributing to the rice consumption along with beans, right? So,
yes. It's amazing. And, Louisiana, specifically parts of the Texas, we have a type of production system, especially in the South, where we have, we basically plant the rice on late February and March. And we will harvest about July, August. Then you have a ratoon crop. And that ratoon crop, we basically, you harvest your crop and then put some fertilizer, put back water, and you harvest a second time. There's a lot of variation on how much you harvest. It was about one third. It's not the same quality, but it's very low input. Like, you don't have to spend that much time if you have a grain. And then there's a connection with the crawfish. So there's something very unique in this part, where the fields are flooded again, and then they start to harvest the next year. They have a rotation with a crawfish, which is a very unique here in Louisiana. How they do it is amazing combination. And as a pathologist, it helps me a lot in my job, because it basically remove a lot of the crop residue from the fields, and with that crop residue, a lot of pathogens that survive in the crop residue, they are removed from the system, a lot of disease. So shift blight is caused by a fungus called Rhizoctonia solani. Is a way bigger problem on fields where rice is rotated with soybean, which actually right now very few growers in this part of the state cultivated just because of this problem. So most of the acres in Louisiana, they are rotating, especially in South Louisiana, they are rotating rice and crawfish, which is a very, very unique rotation. I mean, for somebody that work with soybean, corn, wheat, it's a very unique interaction, very, very interesting to see how the agriculture invents itself. It's a very interesting.
That's so interesting. I did not know that, and it's indeed a very unique situation where you're rotating a crop with an animal production, right? It's really cool. All right, so can you tell us a little bit about what are the main rice diseases, perhaps in the U.S. to begin with, and then how does that compare to other parts of the world? Can we learn and perhaps help to create knowledge for other parts as well, or is that just completely different set of conditions, environmental conditions, and even disease conditions as well? How does that compare?
Well, yeah. So not different than the other crops. U.S. is also very unique in the environment they has, but we also have a very a lot of diversity on where we grow our crops. So start speaking of on the South Louisiana is hot and humid. There's a lot of variation between years. So we have 2023 was a very dry and hot. So no disease developed, but there's a lot of variation. But for example, as I speak right now, during this week, the temperature has been around 80s and it's been raining every day. The crop right now is approaching the heading stage, as we call. So it's a very critical moment. Today, we just identified a blast, one field with a blast. So this hot and humid environment is just what we call a petri dish for development of disease. So there is a very, is all the conditions that the most of the disease needs to develop, we found here in Louisiana. As you move north in Arkansas, that's not as much as humid as we have here. So the disease pressure in Arkansas or for the north of here is not as much as we have here in Louisiana. And California is a completely different thing. They do have disease, sometimes it does show up, but not even close as the pressure that we have here. There is some particular disease that seems to be more problematic here. So for example, one of the latest one is a Cercospora. Is become one of our major disease here to control and very difficult than other parts of the world. But also we are very fortunate that a lot of disease that we have in other parts of the world is not a problem here. Specifically, bacterial blight we don't have here. So it's part of this is because you have a very good control of what can enter in the U.S. So kind of almost a closed system here. So it's not fail-proof, but it does help us to not introduce new disease. So you see movement sometimes when disease become more prevalent than the other, but for quite a time, we still work with the same disease. So one limitation that we have on the U.S. that other parts of the world don't have as much as we do is what we have available to control our disease. So as you can imagine, all the regulations, all the components, when you think apply this to rice, you apply to a crop that is consumed by babies, it's consumed by elders, it's consumed for everybody, almost in this with almost no processing. You're just milling and go to the kitchen. Different than, for example, what you think on corn or soybean. You don't directly eat those crops. The other factor is a flood. So it's very complicated for to spray any pesticides. And also the way we spray with an airplane. So all these combinations are very difficult for companies to register new fungicides. So one challenge is a lot of our fungicides are very old chemistry. We'll talk about on the 80s. So for example, propiconazole, frutalonil, and so they're about, they're developed in the 80s. Azoxystrobin was developed, was the first on the, his class in 1994. And the more modern fungicide, they find a hard time to come here to available for us to use. So a lot of things we have to, we don't have all the tools that we would like it, but, and we have a lot of disease. So that's a lot of difference that we have in other parts of the world. Basically, Louisiana has very close weather conditions as a tropical country. So you expect to see more disease here than other parts of the world.
You know, this is such a great point, right, to stress that, you know, you're producing a crop in a region that has all the right conditions for diseases to thrive. So you have to defend it. But at the same time, it is a crop that is consumed by people, by humans, by people, right? Which, again, as you said so well, you know, if we think of corn and soybeans, most of that is not directly consumed by humans. It serves as feed, perhaps to animals, perhaps to bioethanol in the case of corn. So it just has more flexibility for control, right, as far as what you can apply. So I think that's such an important point for people to realize is that it can be really challenging, especially if it's a crop that we consume directly. It's even more challenging.
Yeah, it's just because the scrutiny for developing one product that be used to rice is a lot harder than for other crops, which is one side is a good thing because as we mentioned, it's something that is directly used by as a food, but the other side is actually hold us to have the tools that we need to control the disease. And I've the quality of the rice in the U.S. in terms of the health standpoint and safety, it could not be better. You know, it's very well controlled. Growers follow very well, like the labels. So it's very safety to consume this. However, that has a price. All this scrutiny that is a little difficult for companies to bring. And in addition to that, 3 million acres is a lot, but when you compare with a soybean or corn, this is a very small market. There's not that much economic interest in on register a product to rice. I mean, there is interest, but just because how much the scrutiny to have is a little bit more difficult. So what this ends, we have to be more creative in how we manage the disease. We have to be more, think more outside of the fungicides. And we've been quite successful with a lot of our approaches. For example, blast is one of the disease that it can completely destroy your crop in a week. Keep saying that our pathologists, we don't have that much creativity for the name of the disease. We usually say it just describe the symptom. One of them there's not is blast, you know, it's blast. But this is because this disease, it was described before pathologists being around. But yeah, it really can blast and destroy everything. And with a lot of work, with a lot of people, a lot of investment and support from growers, we improve our varieties. And right now, blast, we have a fortune that have a lot of options with varieties that have resistant to blast and been very stable to that. We continue to improve for other diseases. We continue to move forward and get the better varieties, but it's a challenge. Not it's not in the speed that we like. So we work on with the breeding program to compensate the part that we don't have those fungicides. We work with the agronomy team to work in the best management for avoid to be more favor for the disease. So for example, flood, you have to maintain your floods. Otherwise, some varieties that are set to blast can have more blast. Have be careful with how much nitrogen you spray, you apply, because it can make those varieties more susceptible. Or also, you want to avoid to plant late, because as late you plant, more disease you're going to face. So we have to work in the multi-strategy approach that we, in the plant protection, we always call the integrated pest management. So we use a lot of tactics to control disease here in the rice industry in the U.S.
All right. So, you know, something I was curious to ask you, you know, so we're describing some of the main diseases and even some of the management practices to combat them. But so let's say if a rice grower in Louisiana, if they do not have access to, I mean, well, I know this is not the case. They do have access to some fungicide technologies, but let's say if they did not have access at all, how much of a yield hit can they get just from not being able to control diseases with fungicides?
This is a very complex question, because the disease, it can have it depends the year, right? So take, for example, 23, which was a year where we have, it was dry. We have over a month that not single rain and was super hot, completed the disease were not there at all. Other years you have, or some disease, take for example, Cornelius mud, that it does not that cause that much yield limitation, but impact a lot in the quality of the grain. So, some yields, they might have a threshold of 3%. So you don't have to have 10% of the kernels. In fact, you just have to have 3% and they will reject that. So you basically have 100% of loss. So it is a very complex, but on average, you can think about 8 to 10% of yield loss. There is a lot of variation. Some years we have one disease be more predominant than others. But the one that is consistent, always there, always found, is a shift blight, which is the same disease, the same pathogen that causes air blight on soybean. So it's a very problematic. That's one reason why soybean move away from the rice fields, because this rotation just increase a lot the risk for having the disease. So, there's a lot of variation, but I think 8 to 10% might be a good guess.
It's good to have that number in our heads, right? As thinking of like how are all these being managed and what's the impact of that management on these diseases. So, you know, my next question for you here is more about on the management side itself. So if you're, you know, helping a grower to decide or just to improve their management of diseases, especially, what should that grower know to be able to make a decision of when to apply, how much to apply, how many more times to apply, right? Many questions on this management, but what is the information, the knowledge that a grower needs to make that type of decision?
Yes, so we establish here our program. We work with have some targets and some goals, what we want with our disease management. And we want basically three things. We want to maximize the return of the investment of our growers. Wherever management we do that costs more than actually bring back is not acceptable. The second one is maintain the quality for our consumers. So the consumers, the market change, the consumers might, some trades might have some limitation, use one strategy or another, or they prefer some other different techniques of production. All these move, so our consumers is another one. and the environment. Anything that we do, it must cause minimal harm to the environment. So maximize the return on investment, protect, satisfies our consumer needs, and protect the environment. Those are the three goals that we have. So what is not there is have a field with no disease. So you can have some disease in your field as long as it doesn't affect this balance between those three. What we try, our research, our target research is bring it with those three goals in mind, take a management, take a moment and go back and see what can we do in any given day to improve more plant health. So a lot of our extension work has been going to the growers and say, is January or is November, December, months away from your planting, but you can make decisions right now that will affect the success of the disease management. So for example, if you have a field where you always have a problem with a specific disease, either because it's a soil-borne disease and the inoculant will be there, or because it is close to, there's a lot of trees around and the moisture there is one thing. You have to keep in mind what you have there. So for example, if you have a field that you always have a sheaf blight, Rhizoctonia solani, again, one fungus that is a soil-borne, if you're going after do a rice soybean rotation, you know you're going to have problems with that disease, or at least you know that your risk to have problems is way more with that disease. So that means is all your strategy must focus on that specific one. And one thing that I usually say to growers, if you think you have a problem, going to have a problem with a sheaf blight, what you want to do is plant a variety that is resistant to blast. Because we have varieties that have a complete resistance to blast, but we don't have varieties that are completely resistant to sheaf blight. But I cannot fight sheaf blights and blast at the same time. I have to choose the fights that I'm going to have. So if I have a variety that, with a blast, it probably, if the weather is right, if the inoculant is there, it probably require a fungicide application close to heading to protect there. But it's not economical to spray more than two times. So you have just two shots. And if you need to spray for blast as well, that means you already one of the shot is already safe there. And maybe if we have in a condition that sheaf blight will be a big problem, maybe by the time you have to spend the shot that is too late. So you have to choose what you're going to do. Then the seeds, what you're going to get, we encourage a lot of we see the best results when plant early. So if you're going to plant early, you want seeds that have a very good vigor because it might get cold here in Louisiana. Yes, we do got, can get cold in Louisiana. And if we have a cold weather, close to germination, that's favor for our seedling disease. So you want to plant a seed that is free of pathogen, that has a good vigor, that can get to the ground very fast and not have the problem there. Then comes your management. Think about the variety that you have. Think about how much nitrogen you're going to put, the plant density they're going to have, all these components there. The weather, there is nothing you can do with the weather, but you can check the weather, monitor the weather, and basically on how much is favorable for the disease, you make a decision, yes or no. So this year, as I mentioned before, it's raining every day in very critical moments. Well, you have to have a different approach for this year than you have in 2023, what didn't rain at all. So you can have there how much disease you have in the field and try to make assessment if it's economically justified to spray a fungicide or not. Not because you have one or two spots here and there that actually will bring you a return of investment. And the other thing is the market. You don't have a lot of times the price for rice is not great, or you have a other things happen with your crop that you don't expect to produce a higher yield field. So think about if you want to invest more. Or the opposite, it might be a seed field or maybe a special type of rice, and you expect to have a high production. So all these things combined. But the big message here is for the management is not have a recipe. All those components, they change year after year. So that type of mentality where, oh, in this stage, I'm going to spray this regardless of everything else, that probably get right some years, but definitely will get more wrong in the long term. So it's more understand how the disease work, understand all the components, not only on the biology side, but also in the economic side, and to make the decision. Because at the end of the day, agriculture is a business, and we have to make their growers keep profitable to continue the market. And that's the approach that we have for our disease management here.
Felipe, as you were giving your answer, I was just thinking of how great of an example what you're saying is to illustrate that farming has got to be one of the most difficult professions in the world, right? I mean, all of these variables, right, changing together, having different impacts on the outcome, and then you have a person or maybe a couple of people or maybe more than a couple, but you have a small group of people that have to be considering all this to make a decision, right? It's crazy. Farmers are really fantastic.
And we are very fortunate that I have to be concerned with the disease only. I even talk about weeds and not talk about the insects. And we have a meeting that one of the growers just raised a question that he spent a good amount of money to fix his combine because the leaves was a little rough. And I never think, like, it depends of how rough is the leaf. It might wear more than the other thing. So farming is an amazing thing. You know, we as academics are very fortunate that we just have to worry about a tiny, tiny part of the very complex that is farming. They do an excellent job in what they do. And, you know, agriculture is doesn't have a mercy. If you make a mistake, I always play big. You know, if you lose a whole year, it might take you all off of the business. So I have a lot of respect for what the farmers do and the impact that they have in society. You know, that's an amazing job that they have.
All right. So we're getting towards the end of our episode. Before we get there, I just want to ask our audience, if you're listening to this episode, you're enjoying this great conversation, make sure you like us whatever platform you're listening. Follow us if you're not yet. Subscribe. And make sure to also share this great episode with anyone else you think could benefit from this great conversation.
It's time for our famous three.
WiseNetics turns podcast airtime into brand authority. We don't sell ads, we elevate voices. If you're ready to boost your authority in the industry, access WiseNetics.com and speak with a brand authority specialist. Let's transform expertise into influence, starting now.
All right, Felipe, so we're getting towards the last part of the episode, which is the three same questions that we ask every single guest. The first one is, what is a resource that you have used from the technical side, so from the agriculture, perhaps the plant pathology side, that you found to be very useful and that you could share with us?
Yeah, so I don't have it right now with me, but I think for rice pathology specifically, what I think is the compendium of rice disease from the American Phytopathology Society is a small book, but it has all the disease, very short of 2 pages, maybe 3 pages, depending on the disease and show the symptoms. It's a thing. is very interesting to bring with me. I always try to bring with me so I can show the symptoms for the grower and how different it is from the other disease. It's a very nice material that has only, not only disease from here, but from other parts of the world. I also love the book of more disease epidemiology, the study of plant disease epidemiology from Professor Madden. So this is more technical, more epidemiological book. That's other one. There's two. If I have to list two, those would be those two.
All right. So our second question of the three is the same as far as a resource, but outside of the technical aspect of agriculture. Do you have any gems to share with us on that?
Yeah. So this is a little bit harder to answer because I don't have necessarily a single example to show. But it's more approach that I take. So the approach that I take is more to be open to other sources of information. As academic, for example, I read and try to be updated with a lot of other fields. And you'll be surprised how much solutions you can learn from a paper I studied on the lung cancer. Or other approaches like that. Because if you can transform our problems on data, then you kind of have a lot of things in common with the problems that an engineer might be facing, a biologist might be facing. So you can bring those solutions to that. So instead of being only a single resources, is more to be open to see what other fields are doing, to solve their problems. I think we, in the agriculture, especially in the academic, a lot of times we are too much close in things that we do and repeated the same process with a few changes. It's very interesting to be open and go to eventually a meeting that has nothing to do with agriculture. You might find a solution that's very useful for that.
Nice. That's a great advice. Yeah, I definitely agree with that. Keeping an open mind and getting some fresh ideas. Well, fresh for us, perhaps, right? Fresh ideas from other fields. Yeah. Nice. All right. So our last question here is, what skills or skill set have you observed in successful professionals around you?
Well, I think is, you have to be humble with, as today, as a faculty, I try as a mentor of future scientists. What I try to do my best is based on the example that I have from other people and from all my advisors before and the people that I work close. They always saw on me and everybody else, not as a student, not as a hierarchical difference, but somebody's a colleague, somebody that is the same thing to work with you for a common goal. So my big advice, and one thing that I see the most successful people are people that I talk with everybody, from the janitor to the director, from the guy from all the parts. And you'll be surprised how many times we saw very complex problems that we never considered and it comes from the place that we least expected. So I think a lot of times we have to go and kind of go back to the other questions and go and talk with everybody and have a more this approach to, you know, be open and try to avoid it, to do always the same thing, interact always with the same people, you know, try to do this. And, it's just, and also have some problem with this hierarchy, you know, this person and this person, and consider that a lot of times the best solution comes from the person maybe don't have experience on this, or maybe it's not in other positions. So, yeah.
Yeah, it's easy to get really focused in what we're doing and ignore a lot of the important side things going on, right? So I totally agree.
Yeah, it's not because it's a bad behavior or a bad thing. It's just it's not part of our standard thinking process out, consider other points of view. So it's something that I try to bring to my career because of, I see as an example for other mentors that I have.
Perfect. Well, thanks so much, Felipe. That wraps up our episode for today. So we really, really enjoy having you here as a guest today. I learned a lot about rice and rice diseases here in the U.S. Really great conversation. Thanks for being with us today.
Well, it was a pleasure, and I invite everybody to have some rice today.
That's right.
It's very good for the health. Very good. And actually, just one end. A lot of the rice research station, the LSU, produce a lot of great varieties. But more recent, we develop varieties that have low glycemic index. So for those people that are concerned with diabetes or things, or have control to the sugar, and rice usually is not a very good thing for those people, but LSU developed varieties that are now commercially available where you can have a low glycemic index. So even people with diabetes, with some moderation, can go back and eat rice. So rice is for everybody. So eat some rice, have a beer, and enjoy the product of the rice growers from Louisiana, from Arkansas, from the United States have done.
Nice, fantastic. Well, thanks for sharing that. I was not aware of it, so I'll definitely look out for that as well when I go to the supermarket next time. Thanks, appreciate our conversation today.
Thank you so much for having me.
Do you feel overwhelmed with mundane tasks that eat up your valuable time? It's time to reclaim your schedule and focus on what truly matters. Get your time back with Elite Remote Talent with APA Time Zone Hassle. Delegate $10 an hour tasks to focus on your $1,000 an hour tasks. Schedule your free strategy call at wisevas.io.